The Democrats have been in charge now for about 2.5 months in the House, and in that time they've become the party of anti-Semitism, the party of infanticide, the party of socialism.
There goes the media again. There goes the non-conservative media shutting down political opinions from people that they don't like, silencing, as we've been told so often, conservative voices. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 295. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So this week, the president decided to push a little further on this idea that he's harbored for some time, that the entire media is just against conservative voices and they just can't. And hey, they are against censorship, don't you know? So the statement put out by the White House says that they would like to hear from people of all political stripes. If indeed you believe that you have been censored by social media, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is, they just want to know, hey, have you been censored? So the meme that they put out is that conservatives are being shut down on conservative. I can't even get through the sentence because it's ridiculous. Today, I want to start the show by highlighting just how absolutely ridiculous it is. I've talked about these studies that come out about the Sunday shows, and when they add up the number of people who are associated with what political party that go on these shows, it's generally 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 Republican. But Melvin, the progressive media, the liberal media, see, this is the same BS that Richard Nixon pushed. And the reason Richard Nixon promoted it was because Richard Nixon was a criminal. And we've got the new Richard Nixon now promoting the exact same idea, because if the media isn't telling you what they want you to be told, then clearly that media is biased. The White House doesn't really care if your opinions are being shut down. What they want is they want an excuse. They want two things. First of all, they're asking for a gang of information. A lot of information on you. And that should make you uncomfortable. It probably doesn't if you're conservative, because you'd give this guy anything. Hell, you'd reelect him by his own admission if he killed somebody on Fifth Avenue. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is they used it to the 10th power in 2016. They used social media. And even right now, Donald Trump is buying millions of dollars in ads for an election that is still, what, 15, 16 months away? So if they believe that they're being shut down, then what the hell were they doing in 2016 when they used it to win? What are they doing now if they really believe that they're being shut down? Why are they buying so much in ads? You can't go anywhere on social media. It doesn't matter if the video that you post is about you standing in your kitchen for a minute talking about your favorite kind of milk. The reason you only drink whole milk, or whatever dumb thing you want to post, or a 30-second video of your food. Maybe you smiling next to your food. There might be a few comments. Say, hey, that looks delicious. Yay for your food. Look, more food on the internet because we didn't have enough. Who knows what the comments are going to say. But eventually somebody will turn it to the political. And it will not be some liberal that hates your food. It'll be some conservative that just sees this as another opportunity to spread their poison. So Katie McHugh, if you've ever heard of her, it's probably because of her tweets. If you've never heard of her, well, she was really prominent during the 2016 election. Let me give you a sampling of some of her tweets. The only way to strike a balance between vigilance, discrimination, and terror is to end Muslim immigration. That's one. Funny how Europeans assimilated, unlike third worlders demanding welfare while raping and killing Americans. She is a Trump favorite. There are many more examples, but this is the big one, the one that ultimately triggered her firing from her job as a writer and editor at Breitbart News in 2017. Quote, there would be no deadly terrorist attacks in the UK if the Muslims didn't live there. Now, I've pointed out on this show for some time. So when it comes to the whole white supremacist thing, there have been no shortage of white supremacists online that were willing to spread their poison far and wide. And they've always maintained a level of anonymity. They had safe harbor in quite a few places. The Gab, 8chan, 4chan. I know I'm giving you all these white power websites, and I'm sorry, but if ever you see these things come up online, I just would like you to know what it is right away. Katie was a part of a group that was explicitly racist, explicitly white supremacist. Andrew Breitbart was the guy who started the Breitbart website. And then when he died a number of years back, Steve Bannon took over. And Steve Bannon's entire thing was turning it into a white supremacist website. Now, Andrew Breitbart was no angel, but Andrew Breitbart didn't set his website up to become explicitly a spot for white supremacy. He just wanted it to be another right-wing website that only gave the hard right view. When Steve Bannon came in, he moved it even further to the right. He by his own admission, he calls it a platform for the alt-right. And we all know what the alt-right is. Because of rebranding, the alt-right is the white supremacist community. Well, Melvin, why don't they just call it... Why don't they just call it the white supremacist website? For a lot of these things, they used to. But then in 2016, when they saw that they had their guy, a white supremacist, Donald Trump, running for president, and they said, man, could you imagine if he got into the White House? And so they all got behind him because he was using this explicitly racist white supremacist language. And they go, God dang it, that's our guy right there. And then when he became president, and I'm not sure why we didn't do it during the primary, but once he became president, there was finally a bright light that was shone upon his racism. And all of the groups of people that had coddled him because of his racism. And the white supremacist movement said, we need to do a couple of things. One, we need to be even more anonymous than before. Two, we need to get rid of the whole swastika shaved head thing. We need to start dressing better. You know, we need to start, you know, stop with the damn Sieg Heil and the straight arm salute because everyone's turned off by that stuff. Nobody wants to follow a group that does that stuff. And they said, and people who are too explicitly white supremacists, we need to either tone them down or kick them out. See, it's super duper important for white supremacists. Donald Trump, a lot of his followers, the idea of white supremacy and the fact that it gets spread far and wide, it's super important to them. But they realize that by getting in people's faces and being so explicit, walking up to black people, calling them the N-word and knocking them out, it's too much. And for white people who sympathize with the rest of the human race, they said, well, eventually we can bring them to our side, but we're never going to do it like this with the damn straight arm salutes and the swastikas and all this stuff. So they found a way to sort of put a new coating on themselves. But Kate McHugh, well, she believed that, hey, if we're effing white supremacists, let's just go ahead and be out about it. And she got fired from Breitbart in 2017. Now, is this the first racist thing that she ever did? No, it wasn't. She done tons of racist stuff for not just Breitbart, but a whole list of white supremacist websites. But as a part of their rebranding effort, the fact that white supremacists realized the way to bring people in is not by screaming about killing Jews and N-bombs, but the way to bring people in is through conditioning, slowly bringing them away bringing them around to your way of thinking. See, Katie McHugh did not start off as a white supremacist, but she met somebody in college and she spent a lot of time with that person. And he didn't walk up to her and give her the straight arm salute and say hi and all that. He would just say little things that made her question what she believed in. I don't want to name the person, but the guy that she met in college and spent all this time with, he just say little things. And it eventually brought her over to his way of thinking. And even though the radicalization happened in college, she went to college on her own accord. She eventually began referring to college as prison. Now, this is interesting to me. And she would tell people, I can't wait till I get out of prison. Why? Because of her conservative, i.e. racist, street cred, she already had a job waiting for her when she got out of college at the Daily Caller, another right-wing website. And American Renaissance, another white supremacist movement, was also taking a look at her. And Breitbart was interested in her. She began referring to college as a prison. It would tell people, I can't wait to get out of prison. This bastion of liberal thinking. Aha. I don't know if I told this story yet, but my father said something to me a couple of weeks ago. He said, because I mentioned my girls are about to go to college. You go, college ain't nothing. My dad's not an old ass man. He's only 16 years older than me. College ain't nothing but indoctrination. Is it really? It's indoctrination. Oh, yeah. It's nothing but indoctrination anymore. It's nothing but indoctrination anymore. He says, I was listening to this, the conservative talk show host, and he said if I had the choice between picking someone that went to college and picking someone that didn't go to college, I'm going to pick the one that did not go to college. Because they didn't get indoctrinated. Okay, all right. So that's conservative thinking right now, is that you go to college, it's going to turn you into a freaking liberal. Well, it's going to do that because of things like facts. Katie McHugh, after getting fired, decided that this may not be the life for her. Now, she was already beginning to move away a little bit from radicalization, but not entirely. And after she lost her job, after helping build up this entire movement, she sent out this racist tweet. And racist tweets are okay. But she mentions in the article that, oh, and by the way, this is an article that's over at BuzzFeed called Get Out While You Can. It's a story of dark enlightenment. She said the election of Donald Trump is what changed everything at a lot of these white supremacist websites. Because she goes, we have our guy in there. We finally have a real chance of bringing white supremacy writ large to the country. And we need to find a way to make American Renaissance more extreme. The Gab, more extreme. The Daily Caller. American Renaissance, more mainstream. The Daily Caller, more mainstream. Breitbart, more mainstream. The Gab, more mainstream. We need to find a way to make these white supremacist outlets more mainstream. And with that, she was booted out. So the BuzzFeed reporter that wrote the article has had communication with Katie McHugh for some time. And she acknowledges that in that community, women are not particularly prized. If they're willing to spread white supremacy, then they've got a job all day and night. But they're not really welcome in any sort of leadership. See, I see when it comes to abortion, and this is the same thing that conservatives are doing right now with abortion, they go, we have five hardcore white supremacist, you know, corporatist, blah, 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 on the Supreme Court. Now's the time. They'll give us what we want on abortion. Now's the time, which just happened in Alabama. And I'm not going to talk about that just yet. Why what happened in Alabama is now happening because they believe that this is going to go to the Supreme Court. They say, this is now our time. And, let's do this in Alabama. Let's take it to the Supreme Court. And the white supremacist movement has done this too. They said, oh, our guy is in there. This is our time. Now that Katie is no longer a part of that scene, she's speaking out against it. She's also talking about what brings people to that scene, such as loneliness. She says, you know what? If somebody feels alone and, you know, or maybe even awkward and they don't have a lot of friends and they don't have good connections with family. And she says, start, you know, reach out to the people that you know. Don't let anybody be alone. She says, when they feel alone and they feel wayward, first person that brings them in, well, they're gonna follow that person wherever they go. And this is not news. This is old stuff. But I feel like we need to hear it again. And she says, and they don't really care about, you know, your son or your brother or your, you know, whoever it is in your life that doesn't feel accepted. They said they don't care who they are and they don't care about them. But if they're white and they're male, they definitely have a seat at the table for them, at least for a little bit. I think one of the other things that brought Katie McHugh away from the dark side, and it's so interesting that she's talking so much about this movement now, because what she did has effectively made her unemployable. See, Katie McHugh has type 1 diabetes, and there's a medication that she needs for that. She's got some school debt. Oh boy. I mean, debt from the time that she spent in prison. She also has alopecia. For those of you that don't know what that is, her hair is falling out, and she's a woman. At times it grows back, and sometimes it'll fall out again. So she frequently finds herself wearing wigs. And now, because she spent so much time helping to build up the white supremacist movement, being one of their best soldiers and one of their most ardent racists. And then when they decide that it's time for them to go more mainstream, they're just going to kick her the hell out. Well, everyone knows who she is. I mean, you as a listener may or may not be hearing her name for the first time. Katie McHugh, M-C-H-U-G-H. Just look up what she's done in the past. It's pure evil. And she's trying to remedy it now. And nobody wants to take her. I've told my girls. I have all girls. I said, ladies, I don't know if a dude that you're dating or not dating has ever asked you to send nudes. And right away, my middle daughter says, yeah, someone's asked me to do that. Oh, Christ. Okay. I don't care who they are. I don't care if they are your husband. Do not do that. And it's not because I don't want you to be intimate with them, or I don't want the photos making it back to your father or something because I couldn't handle it. It's nothing like that. But what it is when it goes into the internet, it is there forever. You can make, as soon as something hits the internet, a million copies are made of it, and you'll never track them all down. And if you take a nudie picture, and you don't even have to send it, just have it on your phone, and it drops into your Google Photos. Or if you've got Dropbox on your phone, it gets into your Dropbox. Well, Dropbox is online. I mean, there's any number of ways these things can leak out, even if you do not send them. So do not take it, because they never, ever go away. So Katie doesn't have nudes out there, but she does have all of these old stories, all of these old profiles, which you can still find, not because she kept them up, but because versions of them exist out there, because she was really instrumental in the white supremacist movement for some time. And so here she is. This movement took her, chewed her up, spat her out. And she's, what, 27, 28? Alopecia, type 1 diabetes, and she can't get a job. Quoting here from the article, at age 28, she's made herself unemployable in the career field she chose, even on its fringes. She perpetually struggles to support herself financially. It's easy to see how someone in McHugh's position might regret the path that she took that got her here. Would she still regret it if she had friends and a writing job? I wonder. McHugh has a message for the people on a similar path, though. One, that can be considered regardless of whether you believe that she's actually changed. And I've got my doubts. I wonder if she's really changed. I wonder if she's just not without health. She's without health care now, and this has just brought this out. People like me, she says, should be given a chance to recognize how bad this is and that the alt-right is not a replacement for any kind of liberal democracy whatsoever, any kind of system. They have no chance and they're just harmful, McHugh said. There is forgiveness. There is redemption. You have to own up to what you did and then forcefully reject this and explain to people to tell your story and say, get out while you still can. Katie McHugh is just one. For all of the pissing, for all of the moaning that is done by conservatives about how they're being shut down and they don't got a voice in the media and wah, somebody get them a baba. For all of their crying about that, whether you realize it or not, ladies and gentlemen, they have a monopoly on communication in this country. They don't acknowledge it, but they know they have it. But of course, they spend all of their time convincing you that they do not have it and that everybody is against them.
And what Stalin accomplished by saying that the media or any of his enemies were enemies of the people is that it put them beyond the protection of the law and beyond the protection of civilized discourse. Mr. Flake went on to say, with clear examples, that despots around the world have, for their convenience, adopted Mr. Trump's language about fake news in an attempt to destroy the credibility of rival sources of truth to that of the government. All tyrants seek to establish a monopoly on the communication of orthodoxy. And it is that sinister ambition is facilitated by discrediting the credibility of all rival sources of information.
I don't know how many people honestly hold white supremacy or racism in their hearts. Maybe you're mixed up. Maybe you're confused. Maybe you're looking for acceptance. Maybe you don't really understand what hate is, if you hate, or even what you hate. Maybe you're frustrated. Maybe you're wayward. Maybe you're angry. Whatever it is, figure it out. Because the conservative movement, and I don't have a problem with people being conservative. Okay, there needs to be a yin to the yang. There needs to be a dark to the light. You can't all be liberal all the time. And it can't all be conservative all the time. There's more than one side to a story. You know, there's more than one way to see things. I don't have a problem with the existence or the practice of a conservative movement. But understand, right now, at this point in history, exactly what this conservative movement is, what it is doing. And that you, if you are out there and you're spreading trickle-down economic talking points and you're spreading white supremacist talking points, you're spreading racist or misogynistic talking points, this movement is not helping you. This movement does not care about you, and this movement will chew you up and spit you out as well. And leave you without any help when you need it most. Believe that.
I'm trying to find out at least what context it was used in to help us maybe try to figure out a way to spin it.
I said, well, sir, can you think of any time that this might have happened? And he said, no.
Well, that's not true.
How do you he goes, how do you think I should handle it? And I told him exactly what you just said, Marissa, which is, well, it depends on what scenario you're talking about. And he said, well, why don't you just go ahead and put it to bed? I don't know what the scandal is. No, he said it. He's in there.
Omarosa Manigault Newman. We haven't heard from her in a little while. She is just as craven an opportunist as Trump is. But there are some things that she has put out about Trump that I believe, and I think she put those things out so that she can get a payday. And she has fallen silent in recent months. And I believe that after all the things that she put out there about Trump, she may have gotten her payday. That right there is Omarosa talking on the phone with one of Trump's advisors, because she asserted that Trump has used the N-word on The Apprentice before. And she says, the guy, the producer of The Apprentice, he has tapes of Trump saying the N-word. The guy's an effing racist. And then the person on the phone says, well, I talked to the president. He says he doesn't remember anything like that. She goes, that's not true. I know he's a racist. And Fox News is promoting everything that he does. Fox News at this point isn't just a channel for right-wing talking points. It's a channel for white supremacist talking points. It's state-run TV for the White House. It's anything other than the honest-to-goodness truth. Bernie Sanders made an appearance on Fox News a number of weeks ago, and good on him. I love him. He did not hold back.
I guess the president watches your network a little bit, right? Hey, President Trump, my wife and I just released 10 years. Please do the same. Let the American people know how much we're doing.
That's a conservative audience that he is sitting in front of. Now, they said on Fox News, that this is liberals and there are middle of the road and there are conservatives and this. No, there are not. That is an audience full of conservatives. Shut your mouth. Like, I look stupid to you? And Fox is this year saying, hey, they've been cut out of really any of the, the Fox News cannot hold any of the debates. And the DNC and the DLC, they say, no, we're not going to talk to you guys. You guys are all about propaganda. You guys are all about hate. We want nothing to do with you in the upcoming election. And I'm glad with Bernie. I'm glad he went on. And Buttigieg says he's going to go on. I think Kamala says she's going to go on. There's any number of people in the 23 Democrats in the field that are running that said that they are going to go on Fox News and do one of these town halls. But recently, Elizabeth Warren said, oh, hell no. Well, she's 69. She doesn't talk like that. So this from the New York Times, quoting here, in her harshest criticism from a presidential contender against Fox News, Ms. Warren, in a series of Twitter messages, accused the network of giving a megaphone to racists and conspiracists and providing cover for corruption. She also returned to one of her campaign's central themes, framing the channel as the sort of corporate profit machine that she has railed against. Quote, hate for profit works only if there's profit. So Fox News balances a mix of bigotry, racism, and outright lies with enough legit journalism to make claim to advertisers that it's a reputable news outlet, Ms. Warren wrote. It's all about dragging in ad money, big ad money. A Democratic town hall gives the Fox News sales team a way to tell potential sponsors that it's a safe buy ad on Fox, she continued. I won't ask for millions of Democratic primary voters to tune into an outlet that profits from racism and hate. Woo! Oh, Miss Warren. This is why she's damn near the top of my list. I would have liked to have seen her on Fox. But she also makes a good point. Fox News is still run based on the ad money that they get. And even with as much support as they have right now, and with as much money as they're making, and how it seems like they're a well-oiled machine, believe this. I've read any number of articles that things are not going well over there. And there are some people that work there who are conservative, who are totally cool with the whole spreading propaganda thing, but not to the level that it's been as of late. I know, if you're evil, you're evil and you're really drawing a line. Are you kidding me? And what Elizabeth Warren did by doing this is she took away an opportunity for them to potentially make money off of her appearance. And the 23 Democrats that are running right now, she's easily in the top three. And so that's going to bring in a lot of money. Buttigieg is in the top five. That's going to bring in a lot of money. Bernie is either number one or two, depending on what poll you look at, that's of all voters and not just the old people. And Fox needs that. Fox is having a kind of a hard time right now. And they really only have the base that watches. It's a big base, but it's not going to be enough to sustain them for the long term.
This audience has a lot of Democrats in it. It has Republicans, independents, Democratic socialists, conservatives. I want to ask the audience a question, if you could raise your hand here. A show of hands of how many people get their insurance from private insurance right now. How many get it from private insurance? Okay, now of those, how many are willing to transition to what the senator says, a government-run system?
You can't see it, but he says socialist, government-run, Nazis, and the whole woohoo, the whole audience just jumps up and goes crazy. But wait a minute. Brett Baer doesn't know what to do. Hey, I just said government-run. Are you sure you want that? Are you sure you want the death panels? Jig is up. People know what's happening on Fox News and the racism that they have spread over years. Quoting here from the Washington Post, nearly half of white Republicans say it bothers them to hear people speaking foreign languages. It bothers them. The Supreme Court, which they now have, and they're hoping to get any number of cases in front of the Supreme Court right now that's going to move the country even further to the hard right, even though that's not where anyone is. One of the things that is constantly preached about is religious freedom. Religious freedom. They don't say Christians only, because that sounds bad. But instead what they say is religious freedom. Quoting here, at the end of March, the Supreme Court allowed the stay of Patrick Murphy's execution on the basis that his Buddhist spiritual advisor was not permitted to be present at the execution, a right granted to prisoners of other faiths. Only 1 month before, the Supreme Court effectively denied the same rights to Dominique Ray, who is a Muslim on death row. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, in his concurring opinion granting Murphy's stay, wrote, "As this court has repeatedly held, governmental discrimination against religion, in particular discrimination against religious persons, religious organizations, and religious speech, violates the Constitution." Hypocritically, Kavanaugh voted to vacate the 11th Circuit stay on Ray's execution in a nearly identical case, ostensibly rendering judgment on the case based on a procedural technicality rather than the substantive constitutional issue. And there are other stories. Three incarcerated Muslims filed a federal lawsuit in 2017, alleging that prison guards at the Sterling Correctional Facility in Colorado discharged pepper spray on them after they arrived at a multi-purpose room to observe weekly prayers. Last year, Muslim prisoner Sharon Long filed a lawsuit in New Jersey alleging religious discrimination, stating, "In honesty, with my experience in this jail, the administration is biased towards Muslims. We can't get our prayer rugs, cuffies, or oils." Muslim prisoners in Alaska were forced to file a lawsuit in May 2018 to ensure that they were provided enough calories in the month of Ramadan, a month when Muslims are religiously required to fast from both food and water during the daylight hours to avoid starving. Muslim prisoners are also singled out and treated more harshly as a result of their religious identity. And where is the Supreme Court on all of this? This is totally cool if you're a Muslim. With just about anyone else, especially Christians, oh, they're going to raise holy hell. But if you're a Muslim, what did you think was going to happen, Muslim? So the numbers right now are stark, more stark than ever. When it comes to Islamic extremism, the amount of attacks that are happening in the United States right now are easily less than 5%. It's like 3 or 4%. It's a teeny, tiny, tiny number. Turn on Fox News. Turn on right-wing radio. Look at what the White House is saying. And they will tell you that it's happening everywhere right now. Look out, there's a Muslim behind you! Less than 5%. By contrast, 78% of the terror attacks right now, 78% are hard right-wing white supremacist attacks. This is not a new drum that I am beating right now, but it is one that I feel that I need to beat again because I don't understand, and I say that a lot. That maybe should have been the name of the show. I don't understand how this kind of thing is okay with folks.
Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now. If if you won't make that pledge tonight, Mr. Trump.
So that was August 6th, 2015. And the idea was that Donald Trump, if he did not get the nomination, he was going to run an independent campaign. And what did that mean? He had a lot of conservatives that loved him, and he was threatening to take all that group of white supremacists with him, and then the Republicans would have lost the election. And this moment on stage where he stepped out and he said, I will not make that pledge, and he raised his hand, this moment, to everybody that's conservative anyway, this made him look strong, powerful, decisive. What do we know now? Now we know that he knew that question was coming, and he knew how he was allowed to respond. Because, you know, we discriminate against conservatives in the media.
This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. They've got to start talking about WikiLeaks.
The wonder of WikiLeaks.
Oh, we love WikiLeaks. Boy, they have really WikiLeaks. They have really
WikiLeaks. 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 This WikiLeaks stuff is unbelievable. It tells you the inner heart. You got to read it.
Boy, I love reading those WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks. Let us not forget about how helpful they were to him during the election. And of course, WikiLeaks started out as this site that's going to just expose these government secrets. And after Julian Assange ended up in the embassy and he hated Hillary Clinton, he decided during the 2016 election that he was going to focus all of WikiLeaks' energies on defeating her and electing Donald Trump. Because, you know, discrimination against conservatives. These people are so, understand, they have a monopoly on communication. They have a monopoly on the media. They roll around with their bumper stickers that says, they don't believe the liberal media. But they're not going to admit the power that they wield. They're not going to admit the outlets that are on their side. They're not going to admit that their talking points, even when you watch CNN and MSNBC, I hear talking points that come right out of all of these conservative think tanks, talking points. And those talking points get asked by Anderson Cooper. They get asked by Casey Hunt. They get asked by Andrea Mitchell. I hear the same right-wing talking points that all these think tanks come up with. I hear those being asked on these supposedly progressive outlets. Now, we don't need a progressive outlet, okay? And I don't think they should have conservative outlets. I think news should be straightforward, and talk shows should be just that. Don't treat them like news. But these folks, they've got a hell of a network, and it's the completion of the vast right-wing conspiracy that Hillary Clinton always talked about. But they're not going to acknowledge that they have it. They're going to continue to say that everybody is against them. And WikiLeaks, what the hell is WikiLeaks?
I know nothing about WikiLeaks. It's not my thing. And I know there is something having to do with Julian Assange. I've been seeing what's happened with Assange, and that will be a determination, I would imagine, mostly by the Attorney General, who's doing an excellent job. So he'll be making a determination. I know nothing really about him. It's not my deal in life.
And I understand that with this show going away, that means that there's going to be one less progressive outlet. And after acknowledging that there are so few progressive outlets, why oh why would I go away? I have to do what I have to do. And I don't care for it. I wish I could stay around a little longer. But I've done what I've done for so long. And you can only have 3 jobs for so long. I think any American would acknowledge that. You can only have 3 damn jobs for so long. But while I'm here, for the last number of episodes that I am here, I will continue to bring you the same stuff that I've always brought you. Illuminating, informative, and of course with lots of flair. But hey, maybe after I'm all done, maybe you can start a podcast, huh?
God created Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve. Somebody say amen right there. I don't care what the government votes on. I don't care what the government legalizes. And I certainly don't care what San Francisco, California pushes. Amen. Hey, it's not the West Coast. It's the Left Coast. You better believe that right now. I don't care what the news media pushes and what the public school has to say. This Bible said marriage is between male and female. Amen. Not male and male, and female and female.
That book, and I've read that book, by the way, that book most certainly does not say that. So I've been listening to a podcast recently called The Village, and it's put out by the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Company. And the idea that I have believed for years about our neighbors to the north, because, you know, universal health care, and then, of course, there's the whole thing where we believe that Canadians are just so nice, you know? They say, hey, this, and hey, you know, they don't get angry, and, you know, they're not screaming on TV, and, you know, they don't think Donald Trump is great, and of course they elected Justin Trudeau, and we go, hey man, they're just so thoughtful and progressive. But the podcast focuses on a number of murders that happened in an area called The Village, which is in Toronto. And you may not have heard of The Village, but if you've ever seen the show Queer as Folk, it takes place in The Village. Now, the show says it takes place in Philadelphia, but it's largely filmed in The Village, in Toronto. And during the 60s and 70s, now, being gay for conservative America has always been a problem. And so many folks had to stay in the closet for so long, they'd go through their whole lives. And sometimes they wouldn't get till middle age until they were willing to say, hey, realizing your life's half over, hey, I'm gay, you know, I gotta say it. And it did all kinds of damage, obviously, because sometimes up to that point, they were generally cheating on their wives by going and cruising for men, you know, hiding out of shame. And of course, inside of the gay community, just saying that you could out somebody, I mean, that would destroy a whole person's life. I mean, they can be denied an apartment. They can be denied a job. There was a series of murders that happened between 2011 and 2018. And they all had the same kind of MO. They had all the same hallmarks. And when they caught the guy that did it, the guy was in his 60s, like 67, 68. And they go, wait a minute. You don't start murdering people when you're that old. You start murdering when you're like in your teens, in your 20s. So the seven murders that they connected him to between 2011 and 2018, they go, these can't be the only ones. And so a journalist with the CBC, he was the guy that decided to go ahead and take a look back at all of these old cases. And that's what the podcast is about. And they've been able to connect more and more of those murders to this guy that is doing time now for the murders that he committed late in life, but not necessarily for the murders that he may have committed when he was in his 20s and 30s, to say, hey, how did he get away with it for so damn long? Well, the reason he got away with it is because the attitudes towards homosexuality here in America, well, those were the exact same attitudes that they had up north. And when it came to the police department, the police department did not care about gay people. Even recently, the murders that happened between 2011 and 2018, quite a few of them had to happen. And even after they all happened, and it was all brown guys that were killed, right? All middle-aged brown guys, and they were all gay, that were murdered. And even now, the police were completely unwilling to just put all these pieces together and go, hey, this is what we're looking for. And when they capture the guy that did the killings, they asked him, why? Why did you kill middle-aged brown men of color? Well, he said the middle-aged thing is just his type. But he said, brown-skinned and gay? He said, and this is 2019, he said no one is going to miss them. They have brown skin and they're gay. No one's going to miss them. Now, that sounds like a statement that could be said by one of Trump's supporters or on Fox News, you know, where they regularly attack. And these are Middle Eastern men, brown-skinned men, brown-skinned people, regularly attack gay people. Hey, Fox News, you've got some kindred spirits there to the north. And it made me realize this attitude that we have towards gay people. We're coming up on Stonewall. We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. And I don't have time to cover what Stonewall is right now, but you should definitely educate yourself about that one. Because some of the things that they saw in Canada were happening here in America also. And listening to this podcast really got me thinking. So I am a straight white male. I'm a soft person, and I am not a homophobe. I am not macho, and I'm a feminist. I'm a hardcore feminist. And what my daughter said to me the other day is, "You are the gayest straight guy I know." And I thought that was sort of an interesting statement. But I do. I'm not gay. Huh. Oh no. Oh no. No no. In love with and long married to a very beautiful woman. Very much still attracted to women, but I'm not at all macho, and I am not at all manly. But it made me think back to my teen years, where I almost got myself killed. So I went to a dance when I was about 15, 16 years old, and I don't mind telling you this. It was me, it was my girlfriend, another girl I knew, and then a drag queen, a gay guy that I knew, and there's all four of us went. And all four of us went in dresses. Hell yeah. That's who I was, and that's where I was at that point. And that's the kind of girl I dated. I was in a dress. She's totally cool with that. And we decided to go to a high school dance. One of our friends lived up in Valley Ford, Washington. We decided to go to this high school dance. And as soon as we walked in the room, and a couple of the dudes in there realized that, because I didn't, you know, put on a bunch of makeup and stuff. I was effectively a boy in a dress. Once they realized, oh God, that's a boy in a dress, they started mean mugging us, just making these eyes at us. And whatever. Get out on the floor, dance, dance, dance. Who cares? Whatever. Dance, dance, dance. I run hot all the time. I'm sweating right damn now, and I'm not doing anything. And so eventually, I needed to go outside and get myself some air. Because it's, you know, it's whew, sweating like crazy up in here. You know, and I think the dress was made out of polyester. And I get outside, and I'm standing there. And eventually, my other friends come out and join me. Hey, what's up, Mel? Just, you know, dang gum hot. Whew. And Valley Ford is a little bit north of Spokane. Spokane's already a white supremacist haven. You go north of there, and you're downright, you're in right Klan territory, easily. And these boys that were watching me inside on the floor walked out, and still mean mugging, still making these dagger eyes at me. And then they all walk over to a car, presumably the car they all came there in. And one of them pops the trunk open. And I had to look. I didn't walk up to the car. I saw it from a distance. Pops the trunk, and I immediately see a bunch of baseball bats inside the trunk. And I said, what? 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 I didn't know what was going to happen. My assumption is I'm about to get beaten. And immediately I thought, I made it through the ghetto. I made it through being beaten by the neighborhood kids, my mom being beaten by her boyfriends, starvation, through poverty, you know, through any number of accidents and head injuries. And I'm here and I'm alive. And this is when and where I'm going to die? I made it through all of that. And now here is where I'm going to die. And one of them looks at me. Effing faggot, what are you doing, effing faggot? You know, and I'm just waiting. I'm going to get beaten and killed right here. I can just feel it. My regret was immediate. Why? Why am I dressed like this? Why am I? And I said, no, I like doing this. This is fun. I like my friends. I like getting out and doing dumb things like this. And the regret washed away. And I didn't respond. I walked back inside. I got back to the rest of my evening dancing. Of course, I alerted somebody, but the principal was just as homophobic as the kids were. So, all's well that I made it out of there, obviously, alive, because I'm on this microphone right now. But the story came back to me because of listening to this podcast about the rage. And they said whenever they would find a dead gay man, they said it was always a rage killing. It was never just stabbed them a couple times. It was 40, 50, 90 times that they were stabbed. Like someone just lost their effing minds. And sometimes it'd be a gay person that killed them, passion. But other times it would be a straight person. And I said, that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of anger that we promote with the way that we talk about, the way we treat gay people. And I think that kind of thing needs to die. And even though I myself was not killed, I know where they're at. I know how they feel. And I will never really fully know how they feel because I get to walk around life as a straight white male. Okay, I'm the last, almost the last person to be a victim when it comes to any of this stuff. But I can empathize with this community more than ever. And I certainly hope you can too. Certainly hope you can understand how, and wherever you're at on this particular subject, and it's not up to you how somebody lives their life, what they do, what their orientation, it's not up to you. And it should not matter to you, and it should not change your ideas or opinions or make you uncomfortable. And if it does make you uncomfortable, figure out why, because it's the most insane thing ever. The fact that we have people in prison right now because they just could not handle the fact that someone else was gay, that ought to give you pause. Now, this isn't to suggest that if you're a homophobe, perhaps you're going to engage in a rage killing. But if you feel that kind of hatred bubbling up into your throat, making its way behind your eyes, think you need to ask yourself why. Because we have lost far too many people this way. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFICPO. Once the show goes to sleep, the episodes that we put out after that, that's how we're going to announce them. So you definitely want to follow that page. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but to keep an open dialogue with you, the listener. So thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. My name is Melvin. I'm signing off. Now that I've woke you up, good morning.